This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
My subject work always about a wonderland. I say I live in another world. This time, last rain in Wonderland. Maybe Wonderland always nice. This time, not. Like life, one day everything is good, one day is not.
Welcome to the documentary in the studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Sahar Zand, exploring the world of Iranian-born, UK-based artist Mohammad Barangi.
My name is Mohammad Barangi, originally Iranian, born in Rash, north of Iran. I'm artist, illustrator and printmaker.
How would you describe your art?
About myself, disabled person, immigration, about my feeling after traveling.
Barangi's art fuses Eastern and Western influences, weaving in Persian aesthetics with exile and disability. His dreamlike worlds feature women and animals merging into surreal hybrids. Tradition meets modernity as Persian calligraphy intertwines with 3D printing, while his signature printmaking technique creates a crumbling antique effect against bold, colorful compositions. His work is held in major collections like the British Museum and the Royal Collection.
After some person seen my work, understand about immigration, understand about the disabled.
In September 2024, I visit Mohammad's studio in Leeds, a city in northern England, where he's been based for 2 years. Okay, loving the Persian carpet?
Yes, I love it.
Mohammad is preparing for his upcoming solo exhibition, The Last Rain in Wonderland, which explores migration, loss and climate change. He plays a news report by BBC Persian that inspired the project. The report reveals the toll of climate change in southern Iran. Dried up rivers, dying wildlife and mass displacement. Once fertile land is littered with buffalo carcasses.
This video starts with buffalo and everywhere it's dry. You can see a lot of Iranian before living here and maybe fishing. Now it's nothing. Nothing. It's so sad, honestly. Again, immigration. Again, lonely. Again, new challenge. Again, missing home.
Mohammad knows these struggles firsthand. His journey from Iran to the UK in 2017 still shapes his work.
I'm after seeing this video, say, this one for my next exhibition. Subject about changing weather in Wonderland.
Wonderland is a recurring theme in Mohammad's art.
All of my exhibition name is Wonderland, Playing Wonderland, Dreamland.
For him, Wonderland is a limitless world. Through murals and sculptures, he crafts dreamlike escapes from reality.
This exhibition about the last raining in Wonderland. Maybe Wonderland always nice. This time, not.
The buffalo was the starting point. After extensive research and sketches, Mohammad had a 3D sculpture printed.
My studio space.
Oh, there is the buffalo. It looks very life-sized and it looks very real. I mean, apart from the fact that it's completely white.
Yeah, plastic.
It's hollow in the middle.
Yeah.
So what's this one?
Oh, this one, my dancer, disabled dancer.
Next to the buffalo, a life-size ballerina, also 3D printed, stands frozen in motion. One arm missing, her face aged, another key piece in the collection.
And she's dancing.
How is this ballerina related to your concept?
You can see she's old. happy dancing one day, but no is nothing. For me, like is south of Iran. No is too old, too tired after changing weather.
Muhammad's figures are self-portraits, missing limbs like his own, but bearing the faces of Iranian women he admires.
I'm using my mom face, I'm using my friend's face, Iranian queen face.
Why?
Because woman for me, like hero. Because my experience in my life, my mom is hero for me, support me, going to doctor together every day.
Persian calligraphy is a hallmark of Muhammad's work. Now, he's crafting a new print for the ballerina and buffalo.
Using Iranian pen, Iranian ink. I love it.
So you have white, glossy paper.
Yes.
And you're using the traditional Persian pens made from bamboo.
Exactly.
And you're dipping it into black, runny ink.
I'm just repeating A, Iranian A. You see, sometimes it's very black, sometimes...
Yeah, and sometimes it's more faded. And some of these lines are merging into one another.
Yeah.
Kind of loses its meaning and identity.
You know, after I'm transferred that in a sculpture body, it's not important for someone is Iranian A or Y. Just looks like pattern.
This technique takes Muhammad back to his childhood city of Rasht, where crumbling murals and old buildings line the streets, echoing his own longing for home.
Home, I think, is too important. Yes, I have a home here. I'm working here, but my feeling anything just every day thinking about my country.
Seeking freedom, Muhammad moved to the UK 7 years ago. Yet, despite new opportunities, homesickness lingers.
For me, it's very lonely.
He continues in his native Farsi.
The biggest challenge has been the language barrier, not just in speaking, but in emotional expression too, which feels completely different here. I'm still struggling, but I've slowly made my peace with it. I've come to accept that this is my second language and, in many ways, my second life.
But art bridges the gap, giving him belonging and a way to give back to the society that welcomed him. The writing is complete.
Now I'll just take a picture.
Muhammad captures the pattern on camera.
Sending to my computer.
He prints dozens of pages, each bearing the pattern.
After print, I understand which one for which way.
Muhammad slips off his shoes, ready for the next step.
Usually, I'm using my left foot, like my left arm.
Born without the use of his left hand, he balances the prints with his left foot.
Yes, look at this.
Carving precise shapes with a scalpel in his right hand.
After that, I'm using wood glue for transfer.
He coats the cutouts with diluted PVC glue.
Okay, next one.
He presses the ink side onto the sculpture, repeating the process until the surface is covered.
Now, needed 2 days to dry.
Muhammad is also working on large wooden panels and canvases. The collage he applied on them days ago has now dried.
I spray butter.
He sprays water over the dried paper. Then he painstakingly scrapes away the paper by hand.
You can see coming out.
As he scrapes, the ink stays behind, imprinting the design.
A really interesting touching with my hand, really touching your art, is about the transfer of energy.
This is so exciting. It's like the art is like slowly revealing itself.
Yeah. This printed is very well. Gloss.
For the final touch, he brushes wood varnish over the surface.
Using varnish, color is so sharp.
This is one of the most satisfying things I've ever seen.
Amazing technique, amazing process.
Like you can't stop smiling.
Oh, yeah, just think it's okay, it's good. It's printing.
As varnish glides on, patterns, calligraphy and faces emerge, glossed over a surface that appears aged like an antique mural. Muhammad first used this technique after moving to the UK. At the Art House in Wakefield, a residency for refugee artists, financial struggles forced him to use PVC, the only material he could afford. That was the spark for the signature style that would bring him global recognition.
This technique, it saved me. One day I don't have any money, but now this glue helped me, you know. This technique and art, honestly, saving my life.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the documentary in the studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Sahar Zand with the Iranian-born artist Mohammad Barangi as he prepares for his upcoming exhibition, The Last Rain in Wonderland.
It's been a little over a month since I last saw Mohammad Barangi in his studio in Leeds as he was racing against time to prepare for his upcoming exhibition.
This is Nottingham, which is our final stop.
Now, with just 2 days away from the opening, I'm on my way to the New Art Exchange in Nottingham, a city in the Midlands in England, to meet him and his curation team. The Last Rain in Wonderland will run for 3 months at the New Art Exchange Gallery. I step into the vast space, its towering walls framing three rooms mid-installation.
So yeah, we're feeling a little bit anxious, a little bit behind. Tomorrow's our final day installing. We need to have it fully hung, fully lit. That takes quite a long time.
Melanie Kidd, head of programs at the New Art Exchange, has worked closely with Mohammad as curator to shape this exhibition.
Obviously, the gallery's had a full repaint using his kind of typical vivid, bold colours. The lush green and the kind of the heat of the red. There's a little bit of a warning with the red as well. And this is his kind of trademark, isn't it? These bright, acidic colours.
Like vintage Persian rugs, Mohammed's colours tell a story. Autumnal hues symbolise drought, while green holds on to hope.
You can just feel that there is an energy and there is that story, and you can really see it coming together.
Asad Adin Asaid is the CEO and creative director of the New Art Exchange. He oversees its citizen-led curatorial model. Mohammed was chosen through an open call for artists from global ethnic majority backgrounds.
We had hundreds of applications. All the decisions that we're now making are through a citizen-led lens. So we bring in citizen juries that are made up of industry, creatives, and neighbors. And we do this because we want to invest in collective intelligence where we bring around the table of decision making the excellence and understanding of industry. We bring in that relevance and lens of our very diverse neighborhood, and we bring in the lived experience of artists. And those juries, they do make the final selection.
And why is that important?
There is a reality with contemporary visual artists where we as an organization are very often gatekeepers, and we do think that where we can make the biggest impact is by really challenging how decisions are made. We want to open up a conversation and challenge the sector in the way they curate artists. And we know that now the industry is not as inclusive as it could be. And unless we open the doors, we have a risk to become an irrelevant voice globally. We think that bringing this citizen-led decision-making into the process of curation then opens up the doors to more artists.
You're happy with that?
We meet Mohammed mid-discussion with his installation team.
Hello, my friend.
How are you?
How are you? Good to see you again. This is looking exciting.
Oh, thank you.
Right, a little bit more than 24 hours now. Yeah, the countdown has started.
This exhibition might take time. I have a solo exhibition in UK. But this is too important for me.
Why?
Here, this space, my first time visit exhibition in UK.
Was here?
Yes.
Really?
Wow. Yes. 7 years ago.
In the gallery, the buffalo and the one-armed ballerina immediately command attention.
I love my dancer. She's the main character in this exhibition.
Each sculpture sits in a blue rectangular pool reminiscent of Persian courtyards. But instead of water, they'll be filled with sand.
Because a story about a changing weather.
It represents the drying of the lakes.
Lakes, yes. And this is some sand.
Mohammed carefully layers sand into the pool.
Yeah, you can see.
Melanie explains that the sand was a late change, born from a challenge.
Mo's original vision was to have pools full of water, which would be so beautiful, and I have seen him do that before, and we really wanted to achieve that. But we don't have invigilation in this gallery, but Mo very considerately and nobly thought about his concept, and as he was already looking at the kind of lack of water in Iran and climate change, he became interested in this idea of introducing sand, which I kind of aesthetically I think is really rich.
Yeah, lovely. I believe my exhibition and in my work, like puzzle, joining together what's happening, think about it, looks is good or not. This sand is nice, like hill in a
hills, like sand dunes.
Exactly.
It also looks like waves of water.
Yes, in a water as well. Yeah.
How many kilograms of sand do you think you've used?
Six tons.
Six tons of sand
we are using here. I think so, maybe more.
Sand gathers around the sculpture's feet, as if swallowing them in. Shadows sharpen under dramatic lighting, deepening the contrast against the bold green wall. For Melanie, it strengthens the exhibition's narrative.
I think the use of sand has actually been far more effective than using water in relationship to that concept and that narrative. Water would have felt plentiful and luxurious and decadent. It would have given a sense of kind of relaxation, I think. You know, the quite luxurious ponds that you may have in an Iranian home, but the sand suggests that something has gone, something is missing. It's arid, it's dry. It's making me thirsty just looking at it. I think that's just because we've been working so hard today, but...
Yeah, I think it's better. Just one.
Okay, so this is central.
Five technicians are installing Muhammad's murals, crumbling greenery, sorrowful dancers, and mythical creatures. The largest is 3.5 meters tall.
They are, so obviously each piece is incredibly heavy. It's a two-person job. Mo works directly onto the MDF, but that very organic, antique quality to his work, it's also the kind of imperfect shapes. So, for example, the board isn't perfectly flat. So the team are having to work with that. So we're probably now 2 hours into just hanging that single piece, tweaking, trying to get it right, trying to get the three pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to sit together.
So some technical problems to get through.
It is always the case, so obviously people come and see the perfect finished product, but it's not always the easiest process to get there.
I just look at what's happening, honestly. I don't know.
Do you guys think they're any closer?
I don't want to think about it.
The next morning, before work resumes, I meet Mohammed in a nearby park.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Did you finish late last night?
Yeah.
Mohammed sets off on a run.
When I'm run, I don't think about my life, not about a country, not about a family, just focusing on my running. In the running helped me thinking better about my art for better imagination.
Running is more than just exercise. It's part of Mohammed's story. A decade ago, he was a Paralympic sprinter. But first, there was childhood.
It's very difficult. I believe any person born disabled, life is too hard because you are different.
School was especially tough. Mohammed wasn't just bullied by students, but by teachers too.
School, some teacher... I remember I'm closing in my bag with my lip and within one hand. Teacher tell me, you are like dog. Too many experience like that.
He continues in Farsi.
I always felt the weight of people's stares and saw the judgment in their eyes. I used to be so angry that I was born without the use of my arm and that my disability had to be so visible. I was frustrated with my arm and wished it didn't have to be this way. It made me a pretty sad kid. But maybe that sadness and that frustration is what pushed me to work so hard at everything I did, especially my art. I wanted to prove people wrong, to show them that having a disability doesn't mean you're doomed to struggle or be unhappy, that I'm just as capable as anyone else. In a way, I think I owe my success as an artist to those childhood hardships.
Growing up, Mohammed's parents were very protective. Fearing injury, sports were off limits.
But every
summer when in a school is closed, my mom tell me go in a class for art, for drawing.
The one thing I was allowed to do, in fact encouraged to do, was art classes. Drawing, painting and crafting took over all my free time, and it was a whole new world for me, one where I felt I belonged. It was the one thing that made me feel connected to others, like I was part of the world around me. In art class, I wasn't different, I was just me. It was the only place where I truly felt like I belonged, and I was good at it. Art has since been a big part of my life. In many ways, it's saved me, especially when times were tough.
Art was his escape. Then, at 18, a Paralympic scout spotted him on a bus.
Ask me, can I ask you, you before try any like athletic for disabled and Paralympic? I said, no, never.
He connected Mohammed with a coach, and soon he was training alongside other athletes with disabilities.
I never have any conversation and never seen any disabled person before that.
Really?
Yeah. When you are seeing another person like you, is disability same, is very good feeling. You are just, oh, I'm not alone in this world. Very, very good time in my life. My dream was Iranian national team.
His dream soon took off. He won several medals in national competitions. Then a call from the Iranian Paralympic team.
Tell me, hi, I have a good news for you. Yes, what's happened? Say, you are invited for Iranian national team.
How did that feel?
It's good. I'm not just thinking, I'm a little bit cry.
Yeah, I can see the tears in your eyes.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Mohammed sprinted for Iran on the international stage, competing in countries like Tunisia, Switzerland and China.
I remember 2011, I running for Asian Paralympian in China. My right leg, my hamstring like snapped, yeah.
At 24, injury ended his Paralympic career. But running had already transformed him, instilling a confidence he channeled into art, leading him to where he is today.
Mohammed's run is over and now we are going back to the gallery. Today is the last day of the exhibition preparation. So a lot to do.
I hope today everything is done.
With less than 24 hours to go, we enter the gallery. I asked Melanie about the decision to put screws through the painting.
We've really tried not to make the decision to have to put screws through the work, but after kind of observing that they haven't flattened out overnight, we're just having to do that. And I think it's really something for the artist to consider in the future, is that kind of choice of material, because it has created like a huge delay in the hanging process.
You can really feel it. There is an air of anxiety.
Yeah, there is today, but we're getting there. Everyone feels frustrated that we've compromised our values, really. Nobody wants to put a screw through a corner of an artwork, but needs must.
Guys, yeah. On the left. Yeah.
The installation seems to be very much a part of Mohammed's creative process and not just merely a part of a pre-agreed plan.
It's my feeling. Just I believed about my feeling, which one is good for here. Gallery, like puzzle.
Tensions are high in the room. The guys installing are seeming quite frustrated.
More, please. All of guys. I need a joystick.
Mo seems frustrated. He, on a few occasions, struggled to communicate.
Was the curtain supposed to be so much shorter than the artwork?
No, because maybe I just think before, maybe in a...
Melanie is trying to manage both sides' expectations.
The meaning of the word curator translates as care, because it was more kind of a conservationist type role of looking after the artwork, and it's kind of a symbiotic relationship with the artist. You have to be supportive, you have to understand their needs, and yes, it's about exploring the artworks and finding the kind of most interesting narrative and exhibition you can make, but a lot of the time you are there to emotionally support the process.
Can you listen? Pardon?
We do this.
Yeah. You are tired. Maybe you are tired, you can go. Because it's too important for me. I'm talking and in a part of my work. I tell you guys.
As the deadline looms, tensions rise. I step away, giving them space. A few tense hours later, the exhibition is complete.
Today has been quite a challenging day. It's always that balance between the artistic process and then the practicalities of time and resource. But I'm glad we gave him that space to kind of experiment and try different things, because I think he's cracked it. The exhibition is hung, everything's installed, everything's safe, and I'm really pleased.
Stepping into the gallery feels like entering Mohammed's imagination. An explosion of colour, myth and emotion. Vivid walls of green, yellow and red set the stage for a world where women, mythical creatures and Persian calligraphy collide. At first, it's vibrant and playful, but beneath the colour, pain and longing seep through. Yet, hope remains. Adversity isn't just present, it's transformed. Murals leap from walls, sand ripples like liquid, and the room pulses with tension. Under dramatic lighting, the buffalo and ballerina take center stage in this haunting, otherworldly theatre.
So, Mohammed, this is finally done. How are you feeling about it?
It's good, but I'm so tired. Yeah, but I'm not happy.
You're happy now?
Happy now, yeah. I'm so excited for tomorrow.
I mean, you look calmer.
This exhibition now, for me, like Iran, I have a dancer, but she's not happy, feeling like Iran. And looks, this gallery is good, it's beautiful, but I just think about last rain in the wonderland, last rain in the south of Iran. I don't have water. Oh, it's so sad.
Human greed is forcing millions to leave their homes. One day, it could be them. From now on, what matters most is the impact this exhibition has on visitors over the next 3 months. More than anything, I hope it leaves them with the same feeling I had when I first saw that BBC Persian report, the one about drought, displacement and the devastating price both people and wildlife have paid for our reckless oil consumption. I want them to pause, to really think about how our actions affect the environment, vulnerable communities and wildlife, not just in Iran, but everywhere. Human greed is forcing millions to leave their homes. One day, it could be any of us.
You're here now, after all the challenges you've been through. How are you feeling? It's a big achievement.
I'm so excited, so happy. I hope for future, bigger space. A lot of person come and see my work. Yeah.
You've been listening to the documentary in the studio from the BBC World Service. This program was presented and produced by me, Sahar Zand.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.